Chapter 4, A Journey into Heaven. When the reader has recognized the truth of the foregoing and realizes the dramatic situation into which mankind has been led by the events of everyday life, when he has clearly understood that this struggle has become a personal matter for every individual, he will then be able to reflect fruitfully upon the work which the Heavenly Brotherhood has undertaken as a consequence of these developments. If a human being wishes to escape the grasp of earthbound entities and make his way towards the new life, to which all of mankind is invited, it becomes his task, first of all, to orientate himself, and then to accept the consequences with all his soul, heart, and mind. It is the aim of the spiritual school to provide some help in this. In the first place, the candidate should understand that the interpretation given by the universal doctrine to the concepts heaven and heavenly brotherhood is quite different from the usual one. People attach the label heaven to a certain region of the reflection sphere of this material world, where those dead have their abode who, when they were still here among us, led worthy, good, or pious lives, and who were directed to this region by virtue of the high quality of their moral and spiritual state of being. In the same way, people speak of hell, meaning the region of the hereafter, to which the evil, morally deficient person departs when he dies, in accordance with his state of being on this side of the veil. On this side of the veil, good and evil are mingled in the blood, and both of these forces are active in all of us, be it positively or negatively. On yonder side, however, when the material body and the material blood soul have fallen away, good and evil are existentially separated, frozen, so to speak, although they maintain one another as antipoles. Nevertheless, whether we exist in the body on this side or out of the body on yonder side, we are and we remain of this dialectical nature order. We remain bound to the wheel of birth and death. Whether a person be pious, mystical, or very humane, or has an occult tendency, whether he has profound philosophical insight, or is evil, antisocial, or criminal, his normal, natural death can never be the basis for an eternal state of being. Heaven and hell, as such, are transition stages leading to a new journey into matter, a new birth. Everyone who believes in evolution will agree with this. Let us be cautious, however, for the universal doctrine makes it clear that there is no progress, no evolution, no true spiritual development in these turnings of the wheel. We hope that every human being, when he presently departs this life, will celebrate his dialectical journey to heaven. After a shorter or longer period of purification, all without exception will enter their heavenly home. But it is an entrance with a beginning and an irrevocable end. Here, as well as in the hereafter, one can cultivate goodness to the highest degree, or explore the depths of evil within our twofold life sphere, but only to a certain limit which cannot be surpassed. On remains bound to this nature order with its rising, shining, and fading, the hereafter is just one great delusion, one formidable hoax for all. Every group on this side of the veil finds in the hereafter its own particular heaven to which all will be admitted in accordance with the law that like attracts like. There is a Catholic and a Protestant heaven. There is an abode for theosophically orientated souls and one for students of the Rosy Cross, for astrologers, and for all the various sects. In short, everyone finds what they are looking for. Whatever one is in one's innermost being here will be found there also. Very comfortable, friendly, and agreeable. As a matter of fact, not at all unpleasant. Those to whom one was deeply attached here will be found again over there. Those who made life difficult for us here, and from whom we could not, for one reason or another, free ourselves, will be unable to bother us there because of their different state of being. To our knowledge, only a few ecclesiastical spiritual groups, other than esotericists of a certain type, know of these situations in the hereafter. Hence, their zealous efforts to win souls. When a priest succeeds in converting a primitive native to Catholicism, that is, in binding him sacramentally, or when he succeeds in administering extreme unction to a person who had never led a really religious life, this usually means the winning of a soul for the Roman Catholic heavenly domains, and presently, when the soul in question returns to earth, it means the birth of a child in a Roman Catholic family. 1,000 deceased natives, bound sacramentally, thus result in 1,000 children being born within a nation or race where the Roman Catholic hierarchy considers this to be necessary. Uncomprehending outsiders, who cannot help smiling at the sight of missionaries playing Christian church with natives who are by nature animistic, would no doubt cease to smile if they knew that the church, in this manner, is engaged in extending its power. The Catholic and Muslim heavenly domains are the largest on yonder side, and on this side of the veil, those who work for these powers are consciously or unconsciously intent on making, or keeping, the heavenly regions of the other groups as small as possible by various methods. The aims are clear, namely, to bring the whole world, here as well as in the hereafter, within the action radius of the church hierarchy. This spiritual imperialism may, to a certain extent, be a matter of total indifference to the esoteric student. Power manifestations of a spiritual, moral, or material nature are always temporary. They come and go. The main point is that at given moments in history, a certain number of matured souls arrive at the right choice, unintimidated by any power manifestations whatsoever. We shall presently define this choice more precisely. It would be a great pity if the reader entered his theosophical, humanistic, or Rosicrucian heaven without having any idea of what these problems are about and why this book bears witness to a spiritual revolution. Before we discuss this idea further, it is necessary to point out some possible mystifications. The student of the universal doctrine, the sacred science of transfiguration or rebirth, must not only reckon with possible disastrous influences from the spheres of hell, but is also affected by countless suggestions from various individual heavens in the hereafter, where innumerable, unconnected larger or smaller groups are hard at work, each in accordance with its state of being. A motley group of various religious persuasions exists there. All kinds of humanistic communities. Scores of occult groups, which readily proclaim themselves as schools, and which work with such a multiplicity of ideas and symbols that they make one's head spin. Some of them bear the designation Christian, others Buddhist, etc. In short, in the heavenly world of the hereafter, we find a colorful array of activity reflecting every religious and esoteric movement in the history of mankind. There are numerous intellectual societies which have, so to speak, specialized, such as healing groups, groups aiming at social, political, and economic influence, and even groups which practice various forms of dialectical science, their aim being the advancement of man and society in their earthly relationships. This situation, with its many and varied consequences, is so misleading and creates so much misunderstanding, suffering, and sorrow that it is possibly more detrimental to the true work on behalf of mankind than the combined efforts of all the orders of hell. We are warned against an evil person and fully on our guard. We can act promptly and positively, but this is not so easy when we are confronted with a really good person who is so very nice and has such pure intentions. Safeguarding ourselves against such influences can bring with it, at the least, some very peculiar difficulties. There is, for example, a group in the hereafter which seeks to save the world with Christian astrology. A distinguished Egyptian group is waiting for the resurrection of all the great historical figures who were mummified in the course of the centuries, in order that they may take over the leadership of mankind. Many claim to be in direct contact with Christ and are involved in such divergent and irreconcilable activities that, facing it soberly, one cannot help having one's doubts about many things, with the exception of their really good and humanistic intentions. One must understand clearly the dangers inherent in these things. When a human being enters the hereafter, he remains inwardly the same. Dying does not make him an adept or a sublime angel of light, even though, on the basis of a certain cultivated goodness, social integrity, and spiritual striving, he may enter a so-called heavenly region, and on account of his way of life on this side of the veil, display a bright and shining radiation field. A student of the sacred science of transfiguration is very much on his guard against both the powers of evil and of dialectical good. The former can harm him. The latter can and will thoroughly confuse him, delay him on his path, and fill him with indecision on account of the wildly whirling multiplicity of ideas. In his second letter to the Corinthians, Paul says that the devil can appear as an angel of light. Try to understand this in a different sense, because these words do not mean what you probably think they mean. An earthbound spirit sometimes tries to appear better and more radiant than he actually is, but such an attempt is so poor, so foolish and primitive, that it is immediately recognizable, and no one knowledgeable in such matters will be taken in by it. There are, however, innumerable very well-meaning inhabitants of the dialectical regions of heaven who really radiate affability, but who wish to maintain and animate the most stupid, primitive, and reprehensible things, thereby unconsciously serving the spirit of the abyss. A person is most dangerous and most devilish when he is convinced that inwardly he is really good and is doing good. Then you cannot reason with him, for is he not good? Is he not serving God, possibly at the sacrifice of his life? Think of Saul of Tarsus before he became Paul. Beware of these angels of light. Be particularly careful when they talk frequently about Christ and Holy Spirits, about all sorts of Jesus figures and masters. The pupil of the sacred science of transfiguration wishes to have nothing to do with these self-styled esoteric schools and orders of the light region of yonder side, although they may also occasionally accomplish some useful work. The spiritual revolution has begun, and just as the spheres of hell have been startled by the radiation of the hierarchical light and, in their struggle for self-maintenance, have pounced in deadly fear upon mankind, so also the dialectical spheres of heaven are in a state of highly nervous agitation. The inhabitants of the various heavens have also pounced upon mankind in a frenzy of proselytizing, and anyone who is to some extent susceptible to these influences will feel himself driven to act in accordance with them. It is perhaps somewhat disenchanting to write in this way about the favored abode of millions, i.e., the heaven worlds. Death, however, changes only the body and the state of consciousness, whereas the character, the mind, the outlook on life and everything connected with it remain entirely the same. And just as thousands of humane, virtuous, religious, and very intelligent people on this side of the veil endeavor to achieve a better world, so it is over there also, the only difference being that the inhabitants of the hereafter Po cess many means by which they can influence those who are living on this side of the veil, with their very diverse suggestions. Thus the circle is closed and the wheel of birth and death, the grinding wheel of dialectics, is kept in motion. Behind the reflection sphere of this earthly field of life, another heavenly world and another heavenly hierarchy have affected our complicated, miserable, and tragic existence, both in the dialectical heaven and on the dialectical earth, in a historical revolution periodically recurring during the course of hundreds of thousands of years. That is why all the powers of heaven and earth are in agitation. Once again, a spiritual, cosmic and nature scientific process has set in, a process of which the seer of Patmos testified, "And I saw a new heaven and the old had passed away." All those affable and so radiant spirits who are indeed doing the best they can in accordance with their state of being are highly nervous. Just as people in the course of the years have attempted to improve the world in numerous humanistic ways, so in heaven and on earth they are again trying, on account of the wild turbulence of ideas and desires, to assault the world and mankind anew with a flood of experiments. Spiritual movements, schools, institutes, and so forth are springing up like mushrooms. One or more are started practically every week in every country, only to disappear again, usually after a very short existence. Throughout the years, scores of different groups in the hereafter have made attempts to work via the School of the Rosy Cross in order to influence a consciously active spiritual public. We have rejected all these proposals in plain, unequivocal terms. Does this not make it abundantly clear that the forces of darkness can reach their greatest effectiveness through all these bungling good intentions? The School of the Rosy Cross wants no part in this feverish, nervous agitation in heaven and on earth, inherent in dialectical nature. The workers of the spiritual school serve the immovable kingdom as fishers of men. By applying the sacred science of transfiguration, they are making their way to this immovable kingdom, that is, to another heaven and another earth. Every pupil will be able to see that heaven and that earth descending from God out of the omni-revelation, if he perseveres in this process and is victorious. The universal philosophy explains the laws, the logic, and the rational moral values of this process. That is why we see evil as a dialectical phenomenon and good as its antipole, keeping one another in balance. It is also the reason why we adopt the right of splendid isolation towards the good as well as the evil spirits, towards the inhabitants of the spheres of hell and those of the thousand and one heavens, and we say to them, leave us alone. The bona fide workers aim to fish mature souls out of the wildly agitated sea of life and to lead them, straight through the most beautiful dialectical spheres of heaven, to the immovable kingdom by means of the royal art.